Yeah, you running your mouth. Yeah, you running your mouth. 219 to talk. 219. Yeah, you running your mouth. Yeah, you running your mouth.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show. It's none other than Queenie. And
Lady the
Barber. And
Trainer Rain.
What's going on in the old crooked ladder?
Oh, not too much, man. Just staying out the way, you know, watching out for these clowns around here with these protests and all this crazy foolishness. Well, not the protests we're doing, but you know the white folks are trying to stop.
Yeah.
Right.
You
feel
wet?
Is it hot enough out there
for you, Ray? No, it's been raining almost every day, so we've been pretty good so far.
Oh, y'all blessed there. Let me tell you something. It's blazing hot down here. It's 97 degrees it's 97 degrees at 9:30 in the morning down here.
We.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it don't do nothing but get hotter and hotter and hotter, and then it get a little hotter after that.
All the time. All the time.
Yeah. But living in living in Houston, that's what you better get used to, baby. Because our heat and humidity down here is ridiculous.
I already know. What y'all lockdown situation and I heard y'all on lockdown or something.
Oh yeah, well, you know, they're going back to the self quarantine and all that, but these people ain't paying no mind, that's why it ain't working. that's why we having problems now. There ain't nobody adhering to the rules. You got people everywhere. And I with no mask, they actually have to make it mandatory where if you don't have a mask on, you can't come in certain businesses now.
Yeah.
I went to the, I had to go take care of some business today, and I went into the place with my mask on. And while I was in the place, there was came in who had to be sent back outside to put a mask on because the building says no mask, no entry. So that lets you know.
No mask, no service.
Right. But that, I mean, that's the same thing, really. So you can't come in here if you ain't got no mask on. And that, I mean, that was just, I was in there for about 25 minutes and four people came in and none of them had masks on. I was the only one standing in there with a mask on.
What's up, Mary B? What's going on, girl?
Hey, y'all. It's me and LB. How y'all doing?
good.
I can attest to the mask thing because me and my friend, we went to the store the other day and she didn't have a mask on and the guy let her stand in the line and get to the front and everything and then said, I couldn't serve you.
Gotcha.
It happened.
Yeah, that'll hold you right there.
Wow. So he let her stay in there. Now, I ain't saying that she has corona. But he let her stand there long enough to infect everybody. Damn sad.
Yes.
Well, I guess was it worth the laugh or the joke? See, I need to meet with him and have a counseling session because something wrong with him. Now, y'all, let me tell y'all about this documentary I'm doing. This documentary I'm doing is going to, I am interviewing men in my family to tell me about their first, when was the first time you realized you were black? And some people say, what? It's the time in your life where you realize that you were different. I'm just saying, you You probably got out there and played with Timmy and everything. And, but it was a day that you came to the realization that your skin made a difference.
That your skin was your sin.
So we are exploring that in this documentary, and it's going to be good. Okay? What's going on, LB?
What's going on? How y'all doing?
All right.
That question that you just posed, I want to bring that up today on 219 to talk. Let's talk about that. And the thing is, we have we have men on here and women, so this is going to give a different perspective. My wife's documentary is focusing on the black man and his experience. So you got women too?
Mark got them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I didn't see Mars yet. I hadn't seen the unedited footage yet. But I got a hell of a story to tell. But I'll let LB, if you got any feedback on that, I'll let you go ahead and go first. When was the first time you realized that your black skin was different and mattered in this world?
Hmm. You know, I'm gonna really say that I realized it more frequently in high school, because I went to a very racist high school. I ended up going to So my mom moved out to the suburbs where she was working, but I still wanted to go to school in the hood until I got into a fight and I got in trouble. So my mom said, either you're gonna go to school with the white people or you're gonna go and get homeschooling, which one you want. So I chose the white people for 200. But
right. I'll take the white folks for 200, Alex.
Yeah, I couldn't do homeschooling. It just wasn't for me. So I was like, okay, I'll go to school with the white people. And that's when I realized racism in its fullest. And I think the thing that really made me realize it is when the school called my mom and told her, yo, we think Larry's a great kid, and we think one day he'll make a really good DJ. But he just needs to get his attitude together.
Like, they said, you're a good kid, but, and what?
Now I'll make a really good DJ.
You'll make a good DJ. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, how old were you?
Like 15.
In other words,
yeah, like 15, 16.
He wanted to be the
son. I didn't have no turntables or nothing.
You didn't do what?
I said, I didn't have any turntables or anything.
Quit it.
So, I don't know where the guy I wanted to be a DJ from.
Yeah, because I haven't seen evidence of that at all. And I mean it all. I mean, you got a little Kirk Franklin going on with you sometimes. You know? Wow. I mean, that's deep. Okay, Ray, when did you realize, I know it sounds like a ridiculous question, but when did you realize that you were black?
Well, I was a youngster. I might have been about 12. So, anyway, we had this little white, well, this white girl. She was overweight. Her name was Julie. And we all, you know, back in the day, used to go to the neighborhood laundromat. So me and my mom went to the laundromat one day, and Julie happened to be outside. And we were talking to Julie. I went outside, I was talking to Julie. And her dad come outside and say, hey, quit talking to that nigga. What the hell? I was like, what the what? My mama came outside. She heard him. She got the fussing and talking crazy, cussing. And she said, if you don't want you talking to her, don't talk to her. Like, and she started going off. So that was kind of my sign right there, let me know that I was a little different than me. I didn't care. But when I heard that, I was like, what the what? But you know, I had to be about 40. Yeah, it kind of threw me for a loop. With me for a loop. I'm like, what the what? What do you think? But yeah.
Well,
oh, you want to go?
Maybe you can go ahead and go.
That's deep, Ray.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, hey, Ray, you know, I kind of can relate to what you're saying because I'm going to tell you something. Being raised in Atlanta, Texas, Douglasville, right close to Texarkana, Jefferson, Shreveport, Marshall, Linden, all them places up in that Shiloh where they still had a Piggly Wiggly. I can just stop right there, but I'm not. I'm going to tell it. you know what I'm saying? Where it was like you knew it was a difference, but you really didn't even acknowledge because your teachers were white. You know, you know what I'm saying? But seeing the country, your mama, she worked at Head Start. She was at the daycare. All the schools was at, like our schools was Atlanta Primary, Atlanta Junior High, Atlanta Elementary, Atlanta High School, everything. You know what I'm saying? So it was like you played football, basketball, volleyball, everything with everybody. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
You really didn't focus or pay attention. Now, you knew it was a difference when it came to your parents, the way they handled stuff. You see what I'm saying? Now, we thought that our parents would discipline us by saying, don't ask me for nothing when we go in this store. And if somebody offer you stuff, don't you accept, you know? And it was really our parents saying, you know what they were saying. Because you would be standing there and your teacher be in the store with you. And your teacher is white. And she going to say, look at you like you need something. She's not going to offer you a sucker or some Skittles. She's going to say you want that pair of shoes, you know, because that's how, you know, that's how it is. So we thought it was our mama just really being a trip. But she knew it's kind of like, what was it? Is it Sophia, when that lady say, oh, your children are clean. Ooh, you come work for me?
Right.
Sophia immediately said, get my children out of here.
Hell no. But the thing is, I understand what you're saying, Ray. And my situation was a bit different. I'm from South Park, Texas, straight off of Herschelwood, right on the corner of Herschelwood and Westover. I'm from, you know, a small town called Herschelwood. It was one street, but we treated it like it was a whole town. You know what I'm saying? My hood was a hood, for real. If you came up off of Herschelwood, you was harder than concrete nails, as they say. So, I went to an all-black elementary school. But as I was leaving elementary school, my mother and my other teachers found out that I had a, what they call, gifted and talented. I was a little smarter than the average fifth grade kid, you know, black kid coming out of my school. So they wanted to get me in a program called the Vanguard Program, which was new to the city of Houston. And you had to test to be approved to get into the program. So I was like, all right, well, my mama want me. You know, I'm knowing I'm going to middle school with my partner and them because I'm the first year that they moved sixth grade to middle school instead of it being seventh grade. So I say, well, I take the test, mama. I ain't tripping. I'm already knowing that I'm going to be put on a waiting list because the Vanguard program filled up so fast that everybody, you know, after that was put on a waiting list. So I was like, and the lady told my mom, well, he gets put on the waiting list, it'll be 2 to 3 years before we can get him into a school if he gets placed. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm doing math in my head, 2 or 3 years, hell, I'll be in high school by then. So I went up to the other middle school and got football equipment and everything, and I'm playing middle school with all my middle school football with all my partners. So I'm thinking. So I go on a Saturday. I never forget, it was an early Saturday morning. You had to be there for 6 o'clock in the morning. Get into this large room, and you take a test. And according to your placement is where you get put on the list for admission. So I'm thinking, all right, well, a couple of years, I ain't tripping about that. I went to middle school and made it to high school. I ain't got to worry about that. So me, I go in there and take the test. The lady calls my mother back 2 days later and tell her, ma'am, because of the high score that he made on the test, we're going to go ahead and bump him up and put him in placement immediately. And I'm listening to the lady tell my mama this, and I'm like, wait a damn minute. So my mama put her hand over the phone and told me, you can go back and turn that football shit in. You going with them kids at that other school. I'm looking at her like, are you serious? So needless to say, I wouldn't turn my football equipment back in, and I got to go to Vanguard School, and I went over there, and we were the first class of black kids in that school, in that Vanguard program. First day of class, I come, it's about 7 or 8 black kids in the entire school at that age, in the 6th grade. So it's three boys and 4 black girls in this 6th grade class. So I'm standing outside my locker. They assigned us our locker. And I'm standing outside on my locker with the rest of the black kids. You know, we all kind of congregate together because it's so few of us. We like slaves that met up. And we just happened to see another one of us. So we out there talking and stuff. And I hear this little white dude talking. And he bumps one of my partners. I say, hey, man, won't you say excuse me? He said, I ain't saying nothing, nigga. I said, what the hell? He caught me off guard. So I had to back up. I was like, wait a minute, what did he just say? But I come from the hood. I had never been called nigga by no white boy before in my life.
Right.
I say, hey, man, wait a minute, what are you talking about, bro? I say, hey, man, what did you just say? He said, you heard me, Nick. That's all he got out of his mouth was Nick. He didn't get the girl. When he said Nick, I hit him right in between his eyes, then his nose, and he hit that wall, and he slid down the wall like some snot, real slow and easy. And everybody in the hallway scattered like roaches when the lights came on. And I stood there, and I was like, if he stand up, I'm going to beat him all the way up. So needless to say, they went and got the principal and brought me to the office. Now, you have to understand something. In the 6th grade, I was about 5'7", almost 5'8", and probably weighed about 185 pounds. I was a pretty good-sized kid. I had played football since I was 6 years old, so I was not a little bitty kid. So when I hit him, it did not go well with the laws of physics. His face did not understand the force that was going to meet it. So he hit the wall and slid down, and they took me to the principal's office immediately. So we had a young white principal, of course, young white dude. He asked me, he said, well, hey, guy, why'd you hit him? I said, well, hell, he called me a nigga. He said, so you hit him because he called you a name? I said, yeah, of course. I said he called me a nigga. He said, well, what if I call you that? He said, I'm going to hit you. I said, I'm going to hit you in your face, too. He said, let me call your dad. I said, you go ahead and call who you got to call. So they called my father and suspended me for 3 days on the first day of school at middle school. But my dad, when I told my dad what I got suspended for, my dad just asked me, say, well, what did you do to him when he called you? Nigga, I said, I punched him dead in the face. He said, all right, that's cool. And me and my dad rode home, and I sat home for 3 days. And then I got back on the bus 3 days later and went back to school. But guess what? I never heard that word again for the next 3 years. I was at 6th, 7th, and 8th grade at T.H. Rogers Middle School here in Houston, Texas. I never was called a nigga again. You have to make an example out of them the first day. I found that out quick. But that was the time I realized that I was not like the rest of the kids and that nigga was a derogatory word that was used by white people to make themselves feel like they were superior to us. And I was just not going to be one that took it from white people. So, Mary B., that's my story, and I survived it. And I'm glad to talk about it now, but it was really kind of devastating to me those 3 days being home and defending because I got called a nigga, and I'm in trouble for defending myself for being called a nigga. So you go ahead, Mary B., let's hear your story. Maybe yours is less dramatic than mine was.
Well, mine,
Yeah, it was definitely less dramatic. I would say I've always known I was black because we grew up in my mom is very pro-black, and she made sure we were very pro-black. So I've always known I was black. But I think the first time I really experienced what I consider was racism was when I had to transfer school, like 10th grade, and I went from like a predominantly, because I went to a predominantly black elementary, middle school, and high school. But then we had moved and my district changed, and I went to a school where it was predominantly white children. And once they found out what school I was from, one of the girls asked me if we had metal detectors at my old high school, and I was so offended. And I definitely not, but I was so offended that she asked me that because we did not have metal detectors, first of all, and it was something behind it. And they also looked down on HBCUs at that high school. So I left. I told my mom I didn't want to do that, so I left and went back to my old high school.
Right.
It was quick.
Yeah, look, the thing was, we used to think, I come from the family who, I guess, you know, and our parents thought it because it was what was taught to them that white was better. So you had a better opportunity if you went to a white school. So, but I had ample opportunity to go to a black school right there in my district. But my mom, I had to get up at 5:30 in the morning to catch a bus across town to be bused to a white school for this learning opportunity that my mom wanted me to take advantage of. But I was already bad because I was getting up at 5:30. Then for me to get up at 5:30, catch a bus for 2.5 hours almost across town and then get called a nigga on the first day of school by a white person, I had a lot of pent-up frustrations. And the white dude didn't know. He didn't know what he had unleashed, but he realized after his nose was broken and both his eyes were black, because I don't know if y'all have ever punched somebody dead in the middle of their face and that's a white dude, but they look like a raccoon because both of their eyes black when you break their nose. That's just what happened. And I hit him so hard. I really didn't understand how hard I had hit him at first, but it happened so fast. I wasn't responsible. And like I said, the white principal asked me, well, what if I called you that? I said, I'm going to punch you in your face, too. He said, no, let me call your daddy. Because I was sixth grade, but I was almost his size in the sixth grade. So he was like, no, I'm not wrestling with this big old cat in his office by myself. There's nobody in here but me and him. So if I get hold, I know that principal looking at me like, if he get hold of me, ain't no telling what's going to happen to me. So he called my father, and he came and got me. And took me on home for them 3 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, your daddy sound like my daddy. Cause I got in behind that word when I was a little girl. Was they call me the ACL brawler, right?
Right.
Not Atlanta, Georgia. But because I was always fighting. I was always fighting in school. You know, like I said, coming up in a country, little country town. Them kids coming to the school with what they talking about at home.
Exactly.
You see what I'm saying?
So
let me tell y'all what happened. So I was at the school, right? I'm playing tetherball. Y'all know we play tetherball, boy. You get that list. The tetherball game, see. They can get real crucial if you don't move your face in time enough for that yellow ball to go around there on their strength. You just hit, yeah. So I'm playing tetherball, right? Now this little black boy, he threatened my sister. He was throwing them girls over behind the bushes, you know, touching them all in their private areas and stuff. Let's move on.
Yeah.
So I said, Ray, you on here listening? I said, no, he turned to my sister. Jessica told her. He said, I'm going to get you tomorrow. He told my twin that.
Right.
And see, my twin never had to fight his fault. I was 25. I fight.
You
the brother. I was the brother. Okay. He tell her, I'm going to get you tomorrow. Okay. This little psycho, me, I heard it. You know. And I told him, I said, you touch my sister, and I'm going to get you. That's what I told him.
Right.
You touch him, I'm going to get you. So next day, I take a little knife to school. You know, with a little, you know, I think I'm bad. I got this little pair of knife, little pillow apple knife. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Well, I'm going to take to school. I'm going to scare him, right?
Right.
I'm coming out the gym, right, where the tetherball, I remember it plain as day.
Mm-hmm.
My sister, she over there ignored me because my twin didn't claim me in school. And it's, you know, I still got to go to counseling for that. But anyway, so I'm sitting over there. I say, I'm coming out the gym. My sister over there with her friend because, you know, she don't really hang with me because obviously we ain't related. She says, no, he looks right at her.
Right.
And I see him about to go forth.
Right.
In my head, now I can run. I'm thinking, so I'll be over there before he even gets his hands off.
Right.
I take off, bump into this white girl. She turns around and say, nigga, watch where you going. Right, you heard what I said?
Oh, yeah, I
LB.
Heard it.
LB. LB, she told me, she said, I'm just saying, she already got a knife on my person. That's what they used to say. You got a knife on your, a weapon on your person.
Right.
She turns around, ninja, right?
Right.
Before I knew it, you know what happened. Knife come out the pocket, she ended up getting cut. Cut one for her.
What?
But yeah. Since you're here.
It's collateral damage, who they call
it. Right. And, of course, I got expelled for the rest of the year. I couldn't come back to this.
Well, you
that was over. I was done.
You were minister to society.
My daddy get home. No, my mama come up to the school in her white Buick. I mean, nice. Baby blue interior on the inside.
Right.
She roll up. The lady.
Was it electric 225?
Yeah.
Ooh,
yes, was.
Uh-huh.
Ooh, I wish I had that she come out. She drive up. It's like some out of, you know, whatever.
Diamond in the back, sunroof top, kicking. No,
okay.
Gangster.
So I say, when I come out, I'm explaining. My mama, I don't want to hear.
No.
She locked all the doors on the car.
Right.
She say, beat me home.
Right.
I got a racist viewer and beat her home.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, y'all don't need to know the rest of it because I don't want no charges on my mama. But this is my thing. Nate girl called me a nigga.
Needless to say, she didn't beat that V8 home. That V8 beat her to the house, but
oh,
mama was sitting there waiting.
Oh, my Lord.
When she got there.
But my mom was a scary mama. You know, she'd be in the kitchen cooking just out the blue when
right.
you get home.
Right.
Then she sit down and watch the stores. And
right.
you be sitting there just, it make it worse. Then
that's
she say, then she tell you take a bath. Go in there, get ready for bed. Now the sun's still shining.
Right.
You already know. Now.
The beating will now begin.
You know, the only thing that saved me from really just going into a coma from that whooping is my daddy came home and said, what's going on? My mama said, this girl got expelled, and my daddy gave me an opportunity to explain. When I told my daddy, the little white girl, he didn't care. He didn't even get to the point of why you had a knife. He just, niggas was enough. That was my experience. Boom.
I agree with Billy Cook. Yeah, I agree with Billy Cook.
He's like, that's okay.
Leave my baby alone. Yeah, leave my baby alone.
Took me in there, got me some hot dogs.
Right.
Gave me $5.
There it is.
Went on by this.
Exactly.
My mom was hot as fish grease.
Oh, but she better not put her hands on my baby no more today. Or it's going to be a misunderstanding in this house.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Wait.
So what are y'all? Okay. Go ahead.
Queenie, how long did you chase the car?
Girl, I had to run about 5-6 blocks. Then I had to cross the street to the coffee store. I had plenty of time to think. Then I had went in the house and turned around and said I wasn't going to stay. Came back to the crossing guard to cross the street again. The crossing guard was a black lady, so she tells me, go back to that house. If you don't, it's going to be worse when she gets you. So the crossing guard, I understand. She made me go back
house.
She said, no, you go on back over there, because if you don't, you get what I'm saying?
See, you already know when your mama tell you to beat me home, you already know what's going down.
You know what's going down.
I already know, because I've had that incident too. My mom said, you better get home. And I'm like, can I get a ride? Nuh-uh. Same way you got here, same way you get to the high. Whole
same
time coming down the street, I'm thinking about a whooping. I'm like,
I already know I'm going to get a whooping, so I might as well just go and get prepared.
Oh, yeah. But I tell you, limb from limb. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. And then my mama, you know, and for those of you that are listening and are looking to try to get charges against my mom, you cannot. I will not tell you her name. But let me tell you.
And not only that, the statute of limitations is passed.
It's passed.
We are not even in. Under the district attorney, that those charges will not stick right
will
now.
Will not stick.
No sense in worrying about it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So listen. You never know what your mama gonna whoop you with. See, I had one of the mama grab the closest thing to you. Now I did have. Now she was strategic too. Don't get me wrong. Now very creative. You know, I think that's where my creative side comes from. Though I just decided to put it in more positive places, but. She had creative ways. You know, me and my sister got into a fight at the recreation center, you know what I'm saying? And they called her. She tied us together with, you know, the little curtain string, you know, and whooped us in a circle. I mean, she was creative.
Now I'm going to tell you. You know, at that young age of being called the N-word, I had one other incident in the eighth grade, but see, I didn't tell my mom about that one until I graduated high school. But I was in the eighth grade, and we was on lunch. Me and my cousin was standing there talking, and a little white boy shot the ball, the basketball goal on lunch, and it bounced and came over by us. So I bounced it a couple of times. First thing came out of his mouth, give me the ball, Nick, and I went straight to his grill. Because you know, from the first time, I was already toe up, so I'm like, I ain't having no more. So when I beat him up, I was finna get suspended, but luckily, we had a black assistant principal. He was like, man, look, let me tell you. Principal next door, that white guy, he wanted to suspend y'all. He said, you can either get suspended or take 6 licks. So he said, I'm going to give you a chance to think about it. I looked up. I said, if I get suspended and it's exam week, I'm going to fail. My mama going to beat the brakes off me. So I might as well go and take these 6 licks. I said, I'll take the 6 licks, Alex. So, assistant principal was an old coach, big old dude. Beat the brakes off me, but you know, I took it like a man. My cousin, he cried like a baby, went home, told his mama. I ain't tell my mama until I graduated high school. Go with it.
Yeah, it
I ain't telling her nothing.
There you go.
Hey, I took them 6 licks like a champ.
But see, what happened, Ray, was you made an executive decision that was in your best interest at that time.
Yeah,
I applaud you for your, your commitment. Well, how do they say? Commendatory action. You know, you should be commended on making that decision in the eighth grade. Look here,
hey,
someone would have been like, I'm gonna just go home and I ain't getting no man. Look here, let me go on and give me 6 little pops or whatever, and let me go on by my
business. Yeah, all the time.
Yeah,
ain't no need going home and get beat. There's a difference between 6 licks and a beat.
Exactly. Well, you could just take 6 pops and be home. I don't know if you had the kind of mama that I had. My mama had breaks in between her feet.
Oh, my God.
She would get tired of whooping you and sit down for a little while, catch your breath, and then whoop you some more. Yeah, I had some epic ass whooping. That's what I call it, epic ass whooping.
Oh, my God.
They had chapter form. You know, you
I
had the
you
first chapter.
I feel you on that because my mom had surprise whooping. You might think she forgot about it. You get home, she's like, oh, okay, cool. You go in there and take a bath, go in there, lay down, get in the bed. After a while, it comes, the cover's getting snatched off. What?
Y'all had a whooping in the tub before?
What?
Oh, my God.
No, I'm not in the tub, but getting out of it.
Oh,
Oh, but I hate this phrase right here. And I think I use it. No, I've never used it. I never use it because I hate it. This is hurting me as much as it hurts you.
The hell you say?
Oh, nah. Oh, my God. I'm on the head. Oh, this one right here. This one right here will ruin your life. When your mama tell you, I'm going to get you, listen, she don't get you right then. But she say, when I get you, I'm going to get you for the old and the new.
And the new.
Oh, my God. You know you're going to die next time. You know, next time, you're going to die. I promise some
and
of them whoopings.
A compounded
oh, yeah. I know.
All your friends are compounded together.
Compounded together. He just started remembering stuff. You won't even remember.
I don't know how they remember everything, but they remember.
I promise. I think during one of them whoopings, I actually died and came back.
I know I do. I definitely have to twice. I died twice. I remember both times. Bigger.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
I'm gonna tell you, my ex used to whip her kids, right? And when she whip them, she be quoting the Bible to them. She be telling them, what the Bible
says. That's how they
about 30-minute whipping. I'm like, golly, y'all better tell her what the Bible says.
Yeah,
you better hurry up.
I'm glad my kids not on here, because they used to tell me, they could sit down and tell you. I used to say, you better run to spoil the child, miss the sound of the heart of the child, and the broader correction to drive it far from them. Boy, I'm beating this out of here.
My mama did not stand no wrong. And she just
no okay, y'all. Let's sideways. Okay, let's move on because I think LB and Mary B, we done ran them out. Y'all still on here?
Yeah, we on here. But you know what? I wanted to mention something. Real quick.
Go ahead, Larry.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. But what I was thinking of is the moment that I realized that we had power as black people.
Okay.
And because it was a moment when I was still in high school, I was still at that racist high school, and I remember that I was popular in high school. I played football and I played basketball. I was very popular in high school. Well, amongst all the whites and the blacks in the high school, you know what I'm saying? So during lunchtime, we had a black table, of course. We had a table all the black people sat at. But I used to move around a little bit and go socialize with everybody, you know what I'm saying? And then go to the black table to reside and eat my food and everything. But when I was at lunch one time, I remember I went and I was going around, I was talking to everybody. And, and I was sitting at another table talking to my friends from the other table. And when I sat down at the table, everything was cool. And this one boy came to the table and was like, this is my table. I sit here. And I'm like, it don't have your name on it? Where your name at? And he was like, well, you need to get up. You need to move. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm not going to move. And I was really about to move, but then because you told me I had to move, I didn't want to move no more.
Right.
So I was like, you know what? No, I'm not moving or whatever. So then dude got up like he wanted to fight. So
right. If
you take it there, you know, I'm going to go there with you. So I get up too, like, okay, well, what's up then? Right. And then before it could really get escalated, the little people who got the lunch mates, whatever you want to call them, they came out and they broke everything up, right? And took us to the dean's office.
Right.
Or whatever. The dean tried to suspend me. And I'm like, first of all, we didn't even fight. But the reason why I got up is because he made a thing of me being at the table. And they was like, well, you didn't try to de-escalate the situation, because if you did, you would have just moved. And I'm like, what? So I'm being suspended because I didn't move from the table when the guy asked me to move? And they was like, yeah. And I was like, okay. But I remembered earlier we had a class assignment where we had to actually go. It was the day we had out of school, and on our day out of school, we had to actually go and do a job shadowing for a career field that we were interested in. And because I was interested in law, I went and I did my job shadowing at the Cochran firm in Chicago.
Right.
So the Cochran firm in Chicago have all black lawyers, and I learned very early about the kid networking. So I went around that firm. I got these different attorneys, business cards and everything. I had their phone numbers and everything like that. And when that happened, I called up one of the lawyers, and I told them what happened. And immediately they got on the phone with the district. They said, Larry, you hold on. They called on three-way, the district, the school district, and they said, he just told me he was suspended because a white child asked him to move and he refused to move. Is this true? And that lady, I mean, when I tell you their voice changed, all of a sudden that perky white voice came on, and they said, what? Suspended? Oh, no. Larry's not suspended. We want to see him bright and early tomorrow.
Right.
Oh, and I realized right then that we as black people, we have power if we use it the right way. Now, I could have realized right then that I could have started a whole big scene right then about, oh, no, you're not going to suspend me because I didn't move, what if Rosa Parks didn't move, and all this and that. I wanted to go there with him. I wanted to go there with him, but I didn't do that. Instead, I used the networking that I had, and I let them take care of it, and immediately it changed everything. And when I say I went up in that school the next day, cheesing, looking at them like, hey, you going to say anything? Anything at all? Let me just call my lawyer.
I know that's right. But, you know, the thing about that is, that's the same thing I tell these young cats today about dealing with the police. You know, we try to win a court case on the side of the road. It's not going to ever happen. You want to stand there and argue with the lawman and all that, you're not going to win your court case right there on the side of the road. Best thing you could do is, if you have to, just go and take the ride and work it out in litigation. Let the, through the court process, but at least you will be safe and sound and you're not putting yourself in any further harm or danger. But we got so many hot-headed young black men and women who feel like they right and they got to be right, and you can't tell them that they wrong. Like I tell people all the time, Larry, even if a police officer accidentally shoot and kill you, if it's found to be an accident and he gets reprimanded, you still dead.
Exactly.
They're not going to apologize and bring you back to life. You're just going to be a dead Negro that didn't make it to the courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't make it. When you could have just let them put the cuffs on you, get in the back of the car, don't resist, and go down there and get you a bail and let your mom and them, look, I always, mom and them.
But you know, you see those videos where yeah, the cop might be wrong.
Yeah, he's wrong.
But why are you walking out from him and why you resisting arrest?
Or you fighting him.
Or
you don't want to punch and fight on him.
He's still law enforcement. And if you won't, like you said, you can't try your case on the side of the street.
Exactly.
You know, I'ma just walk in a curve until he gets tired. No, when he call them other four calls, they guess what? You gonna get tired.
And the adrenaline level gonna be so high when the other four get there to you looking at a whooping, regardless of whether you wrong or right. You're gonna have the same amount of knots on your head and the same amount of pain to your body, whether you wrong or right. But if they, like I said, they accidentally shoot and kill you, even when they apologize and get put on death duty for 30 days, you don't come back after them 30 days. You dead. That's just it. So the best thing you can do is go on a ride, go get you a bail, and come on. Yeah. But yeah,
that's,
I understand what you're saying too, Larry. That ties in directly with the situations that we are facing today as black people. And we want to be so arrogant and so unauthority oriented that we think we got to win our case right now. I'm not going nowhere.
Right.
Oh, yeah,
exactly.
You're going.
Mm-hmm.
The hell you not going?
Now, listen, I'm going to tell you this. I'm not standing up for no police brutality. I'm not, and some people like to listen to these shows and say, listen to them. They are okay in it. No, listen, it's just like if I'm outside of my house, right, with my mom and my daddy, they expect me to act a certain way. But and if somebody do me wrong, guess what? Or if I do wrong, when I get home, they're going to deal with me.
Do you get what I'm saying? So, as black people, when we get home, we need to deal with our own community, our own stuff. I had a young lady had an attitude because she didn't want me talking about the flip side of, I mean, not even the flip side. She didn't want me talking about the issues that's happening right inside of our black community. She wanted everything to be about hate the white people, hate what they did to us. Yeah, I don't hate white people. I hate what prejudice, I hate hatred. I hate discrimination. You see what I'm saying? But at the same time, when we deal with our own stuff and not put it right next to what white folk doing or whoever, if we deal with our own stuff as black people, we need to deal with our own children. We need to raise them up right. They need to see us do better so they can do better. And some of our children, even if they see us doing better, they still going to do what they going to do. You see what I'm saying? So we have to get out of that place where we don't want nobody to tell us nothing about ourselves within our culture. Let's be real, okay? We don't want to talk to each other about our issues. We don't want our husbands telling our sons that they need to get up off their behind and do something with their life. You get what I'm saying? It's something going on within the household, within the black community that the black community needs to deal with. You get what I'm saying? And so, yeah, the white folks out of line. They out of line. They out of order. Half of them need to be locked up. Just like you would get a death penalty to a black man, and you don't even have all the evidence. You get what I'm saying? Let me not go down the death penalty. Let's move on. But I'm just saying, let's take responsibility in all of it. And let's be real. We always stand up when things get hot, but as soon as things cool off, we go back to sleep. I just hope we don't go back to sleep this time. Okay? That's my stance on it. Now I'm in here cooking some ranch style beans. I'll be right back.
Stay woke.
Go ahead and talk to us, Ray.
Now, you know, you're absolutely right. And people condone. I mean, if you know, and it's big in black communities, if you know your child is doing wrong and he get caught up, he or she get caught up, sometimes you have to take that child and straighten them to let them know that you're doing wrong. Don't condone it then when somebody else tighten them up, you're mad. Because now you're wondering why he get out here and do something crazy, somebody put their hands on him, they beat him up, or whatever the case may be, but you know he ain't wrong. You know, but society always going to look at you as being wrong. Anyway, I was watching a video the other day, and these black guys had assault rifles. And the media, when they came out, they asked the black guy why they had rifles, and the dude was explaining. He said, we got them because they had theirs. He said, don't come to us when the issue, when we come back to resolve the issue, you should come out here when those guys was out here harassing these young black girls or black girls out here with their assault rifle, but y'all didn't show up and ask not one question. But when we came out with our assault rifles, y'all want to ask us why we got assault rifles. So don't, you know, people going to put the blame on whoever, but like you said, Queenie, when people, like you said, people need to start taking responsibility for their actions or responsibility. Like you said, I ain't condoning what the white folks doing. I'm not condoning it because it's been wrong for 400 years or more. But, you know, sometimes they have to take charge. Because if you know your son or daughter out there doing crazy stuff and then they get hemmed up, and sometimes if they, like you said, JD, you know, you can't fight on the street. You can't battle on the street because you're gonna lose. You're gonna lose. Ain't no win-win situation. You're gonna lose.
You know what? It's something that I instill in my kids because I know that my oldest is about to be in driving age in a couple of years. But one thing I instill in my kids is, hey, the thing is to make it home. You know what I'm saying? After you make it home, I can handle it. You know what I'm saying? Your mama can handle it. We can do some things about it, but let's make it home first. You know what I'm saying? And that's the thing that I instill in them. It's like, hey, it's not going to be fair all the time. You know what I'm saying? It's not going to be fair. I told them that off the back. It's not going to be fair. You're black. So you're going to see your friends able to get away with things that you're not able to get away with. You're going to see you do some things and you get way more trouble than what your white friend got away with. You get what I'm saying? It's just, that's the way it is. It's not going to be fair all the time. You're going to get pulled over sometimes just because you're young and you're black and you're driving a nice car. It's going to happen. You know what I'm saying? But the thing is, not to fight your case right then, not to go off right then, not to try to plead yourself with the officer, but to come home and tell us what happened and let us handle it from there.
Right.
And that's the thing I instill in my kids. I'm not trying to teach you to be no punk or anything like that, but I'm teaching you how to stay alive.
Right. You know, a lot of people also within us black need to learn these laws. Just like you said, them lawyers knew the laws and they were black. They knew what it was, you know. Need to learn these laws. A friend of mine, he's in Arlington or Fort Worth, Texas, and he wrote a post on Facebook one day talking about, why is it I'm always getting stopped? Because he drives a Corvette now. And why I'm always getting stopped in this area? They want to search my car. Somebody, I'm a drug dealer. Asking him questions like, how is a black person like this able to drive a car like that? And I told him, I said, listen, man, learn your laws. For one, they can't pull you out of the car or search your car without smelling or seeing anything. I said, but learn your laws so they can stop messing with you, because if you know your laws, you know what to say, but true enough, you still can't fight it on the street, but you can still get it out there if you know your laws. And we need to be, as blacks, we need to be as strong in the laws as the white people.
Amen. Amen to that. Amen to that.
Because these white folks know the laws. Black folks, we ain't going to pick up no book of reading about no law or learning about no law. You should. Because there's a lot of laws out there that get you hemmed up. You had no clue that it gets you hemmed up. So we need to learn the laws just like the white people. Learn the laws, know the laws. And that way you don't get, but don't try to be arrogant just because you know a law. Don't get out there and think you tough just because you know something. But still ride right, do right, you know what I'm saying? Then you ain't got to worry about expressing that law to that officer or whoever. But just know your law.
So, I mean, I think that it's important for us to realize, I mean, not only for us to know our laws, but know when to exercise our rights, too.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I think that's the thing that we have to realize, too, is when we exercise our rights. You know what I'm saying? Everything is not a moment for us to say, hey, I know the law. You're not supposed to do this right here. I know the law. You're not supposed to do that right there. You think they care? They know the law, too. They're not going to go by it. You know what I'm saying? The thing is, when we take the knowledge that we have and we go and we bring that up to the right people, you know what I'm saying? This is why we end up shot and killed, because we want to take the knowledge that we have against this racist person who already don't care about it anyway.
Right.
So, I mean, the thing is, I think that we need to learn how to make things count for the right moment. I remember the first time I got harassed by a police officer. I was walking home from work, and they literally, you know, tried me up and down. Where you coming from? What's in your hand? My cell phone was in my hand. And I think I told them my cell phone, and it was just me saying that. Oh, don't you get smart with me. You know what I'm saying? It was quick. And you know what? Immediately, I changed my tone. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm just trying to go home, sir. Thank you, sir. And I let it go with that. But the moment I get home, what I did is I got on my phone and I started calling chiefs. You get what I'm saying? I started calling bosses. You get what I'm saying? That's what I did when I got home. But the thing was, let me get home first. I'm going to say yes, sir. I'm going to say no, sir. I'm going to do whatever, right? I'm going to let you have your moment. But when I get home, I already know which routes I need to take.
That's right. When you get home, you can call the right people and get it handled. Because if you, sometimes they take it a little bit too far, especially when they get to see you walking around or walking somewhere, they want to stop you and ask you 1,000 questions when they pretty much know the answer, they just want to harass you anyway.
Yeah, they just want to harass you. They just want to harass you. And I already knew where it was going when we asked you what I had in my hand, and I said my cell phone. And then they got mad. Are you getting smart with me? Oh, no, sir. No, I know it. Because I've already seen so many stories of people's cell phones being taken as guns. Right. So, no, I'm not going to let you think that my cell phone say, hey, oh, he had a gun on him. You know what I'm saying? Let me go ahead and switch this up real quick. No, sir. Yes, sir. What do you need, sir? I'm just trying to get home, sir. That's all I'm trying to do. You know what I'm saying?
And you're right. And you still have to be careful because I seen a video on Facebook where this guy was videoing where he got stopped. And when he got stopped, the officer yelled out, you know, he had about six other officers around. He yelled out guns, even though the dude in the car didn't have a gun. He said, hold up, how you going to get out and I don't have a gun? Some officer would get ready to draw down on him and everything because just because this cop wanted to be crazy and be a racist, and he just yelled out gun, knowing there was no gun involved.
Wow.
So they would do stuff like that. People, these cops don't care. But like I said, know your laws so you can use your laws when the time comes. And like you said, make it home.
Make it home. Make it home.
Everybody
is so powerful in that saying, you know, to, I think, I mean, for one, it's sad that this is the conversation we have to have with our children, right? This is the conversation you need to have. You know, when I teach you the rules of the road, when
LB?
I teach you, hey, at this, you know,
all right. Amen. This topic is very, 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 very passionate about this topic here. And I love the way you said, just make it home. Okay, we got 2 minutes left in the broadcast. Want to give this opportunity to Mayor B. Go ahead and sign off and tell us a little bit about Hey Girl. Mayor B.
Yes, I'm sorry, you guys. No, I had to mute the phone. Okay, so I wanted to, you know, I just have to turn around just a little bit. So have we all caught the Jada Pinkett and August Alsina love triangle? Have we caught the hot topic?
Well, we're at the
okay,
last
so minute. wait, before you, wait. I just want to say, have we caught it? We don't have to talk about it yet. I just want to ask if maybe we all caught it because I want to make sure we all know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
We know what's going on? Okay. I heard about it. Just heard it. Okay. So apparently, you know how Jada, when she started the Red Table, you know, she started with August Alsina about his depression and how he lived with their family and he was just such an awesome young man and how he helped her move on from, you know, Tupac that. From Tupac dying and things of that nature. So she made it seem like, you know, she was mentoring him. So then it comes out, you know, once because he's sick and everything, and he released his album, and it was mostly love songs to her. So he actually did an interview saying, you know, how in love he was with her for years, and she just threw him away like trash, you know. And at the time, he was like 21, and she was like 44-ish, and she met him through her son. So people were saying, like, oh, and that he said that Will Smith gave his blessing. So people were, like, shocked. Well, not everyone, because it's been, you know, rumored for a long time, but a lot of people were shocked and basically about really what their, like, age difference. And I just wanted to see, how did you all feel about that?
I'll tell you what, we will discuss it on the next show. Time to sign off. So go ahead, Mayor B, tell us about Hey Girl so that we can know to tune in.
Okay, awesome. Well, I want you all to catch Hey Girl on Wednesdays at 8 p.m. We're going to have topics like that, but we are going to get back to that next week here on 219. So we can actually talk about it because I want to get you all's opinion also for the show. But make sure you all tune in. Make sure you're following the YouTube channel on My Gospel Soul. And we'll see you all next week.
All right.
All right, Ray, what's up?
Hey, this trainer Ray down here in the dirtiest. Yeah, just letting you know, Thank y'all for joining us tonight on 219 The Talk. Always check me out on Saturday at 12 o'clock for Fitness Evolution with Trainer Ray. You can call in and talk to me about any fitness questions you may have. Y'all have a great evening.
All right, LB.
Yeah, man, it's your boy LB. Thank y'all for tuning in once again. Thank you all for another show. I love it each and every Thursday. Tune in, y'all. And also check us out on Monday, Soar Like Eagles. Check it out on Mondays as well. All right.
This is your boy, JD, the barber. And we're signing off again after a wonderful night here on 219 The Talk in hot Houston, Texas. And we just want to thank y'all for tuning in. And we'll see y'all again next week, next Thursday, 7 o'clock.
Same bad time.
219 The Talk, baby.
Same bad time. All right. 20. Love y'all.
219 to talk, 219 to talk, 219 to talk, 219 to talk, let's go, 219, yeah, 219, yeah, 219 to talk.